Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo. Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Thanks for tuning in today. Today we have a dynamic guest, and he is a Mr. USA, second place Mr. Universe. He is an award-winning author, and he also is an author of a fabulous book. Probably will hit the silver screen one day, and it is called Room Full of Killers. And his name, again, is Preston Rendell. I am sure you've heard of Preston Rendell. Do you like boxing or sports? Well, you're going to be taken behind the scenes of the boxing arena, and we're going to be told some fictional stories that were based actually on some true incidents. And so if you like to know about love and romance and sports and boxing and want to find out a little bit more about Preston Rendell and his background, you are in the right place at the right time. Plus, he is an author. Not only an author, but he is also a businessman. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Preston Rendell in just a moment. But first, I wanted to touch on one incident. Speaking of health, because everyone is interested in what is happening in our nation and around the world, our nation seems to be behind the times, because there's at least three countries in Europe who are dropping all the COVID mandates and returning back to normal. And this is by Dr. Mercola, and I've been following Dr. Mercola since 2009. And he has been put on restriction, so you can find his articles, but he is not allowed to keep his articles up for very long. I think it's like 48 hours. And so that's why I wanted to mention Dr. Joseph Mercola. You can find him online if you aren't familiar with his efforts and his hard work in educating Americans and the world. And this is his story at a glance for today. The COVID pandemic is rife with cover-ups, starting with China, intentionally allowing the outbreak to spread by saying there was no evidence of human-to-human transmission. In 2019, Dr. Fauci and a former director of the U.S. Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, BARDA, hinted at a pandemic being a perfect excuse for transitioning from conventional vaccine manufacturing into experimental mRNA technology that would otherwise take decades to bring to market. And I want to mention that mRNA has never been used on human beings. This is an experiment, and it's a worldwide experiment, and it's experiment and trials. And it was based on the fact that everybody was dropping dead from COVID. Sadly, some people did contract COVID and they were injured or passed away, but it is now being reported that more people are being hospitalized, uninjured, and having heart attacks, strokes, and neurological injuries and paralysis and much more after they are vaxxed. And even the Pfizer president, CEO, stated that the vaccines are not as effective as they had hoped for. And so now they're talking about second jabs and booster after booster after booster and prescription drugs for COVID. And it's like a never-ending cycle of something that they refuse to admit, that natural immunity and herd immunity have always worked in the past. But they are raking in billions and billions of dollars from this announcement in 2019 by Dr. Fauci of the COVID virus and all of his lockdowns along with CDC and WHO, and denying Americans the right to go outside, to visit their neighbors, to visit their families, to go to work, to go to school. And this has been a horrendous distraction of economic disaster, educational disaster, business disaster for the middle class, and a job disaster for the American people. Never before has America been taken hostage by the healthcare officials. So Dr. Mercola says two of the biggest cover-ups have been persistent denials of SARS-CoV-2 being the result of gain-of-function research and that the pandemic was the result of a lab leak, which accidental or intentional. Cover-ups have created irrational narratives, which in turn have resulted in a number of irrational beliefs and behaviors, including the excessive dependence on plastic sheathing, plastic barriers, single-directional walking directives, the idea that natural herd immunity doesn't exist, and traumatic spread does, and the belief that lockdowns lower infection rates. Well, if you're in a closed-in situation and someone is ill, your chances of getting ill are extended to the point that your chances of getting ill will happen in a closed facility or home or building than by being out in the public. One of the most persistent irrational beliefs spawned during this pandemic, Dr. Mercola says, is that masks prevent the spread of the virus. A recent UK Department of Education report found no evidence that universal mask wearing in schools reduced absences due to illnesses and therefore should not be mandated. So you can read more of this article if you look up Dr. Mercola, articles.mercola.com, and read the rest of the article. It's very important. Like I said, it's only up for like 48 hours. I also researched the mask, long-term mask wearing, and the only thing I could find on CDC, NIH, all the health articles that are published online is that there is no scientific evidence to prove that a mask stops a virus. And that was pretty conclusive by every article I read. And on that point, we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, because we're going to talk about our very dynamic guest, who absolutely is into health. In fact, you've probably heard the name, Preston Rendell. He is a three-time award-winning writer, and he has written for fitness magazines for the last 20 years. The magazines include Muscle Mag, International, Planet Muscle, and Natural Physique. His subjects include training, nutrition, historical subjects, interviews, and humor articles. He is an excellent writer. He took 2 years off to write his current novel, Room Full of Killers, which has a possibility of reaching the silver screen. He's also written Health Nuts on Cape Cod. In 1964, he owned and operated the third health club in Massachusetts called President City Health Club. In Quincy, and the second health club on Cape Cod called Preston's Health Spa in Hyannis, Massachusetts. Along the way, he won Mr. USA and in Kansas City and placed second in Mr. Universe, Las Vegas. He's a strong advocate for steroid-free sports and would like to think he was a catalyst in the fitness health boom in Massachusetts. He lived in Boston's Italian North End. He trained and boxed out of New Garden Gym on Friend Street and the University Gym in the South End. So why don't we just get started and let's say hello to our very special guest, Preston Rendell. Hi, Preston. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, Rose. How about yourself?
Oh, pretty good. We have sunshine here. How about you? We're on the West Coast.
Overcast. But it's it's about 45 degrees, which is a real big change. That's a heat wave.
Yeah.
We were in single digits for like 4 weeks.
Oh, my gosh. You guys were freezing.
My cat wouldn't go out.
Furry cat wouldn't even go out.
No, he wouldn't. He opened the door and he looked at me and said, "No way, pal."
Do your pipes freeze up or your electricity or anything like that go down when it gets that cold?
No. Well, electricity went off during the storm. Probably 10 times. It'd go on and off, on and off, on and off. And it's on now and it's melting. It's snow, so another couple of days. Yeah, and it's supposed to be warm and rain tomorrow, so that'll get rid of some, too, you know?
Yeah, we're fortunate.
I know, I lived in L.A. for a year. I lived in Florida for a year. What am I doing up in the Northeast freezing?
If it gets in the 60s here, we think we're freezing to death.
Oh, really?
Seriously.
We'll get in the 60s in April.
Well, Preston Rendell, it's such a pleasure to have you on Colombo Chronicles today. And this wonderful book, novel, Room Full of Killers, is a page-turner, and it's a fantastic book. And for those, and it's 534 pages, but it doesn't seem like it's 534 pages because it is a page-turner. So, Preston, for those who don't know anything about your background or very little, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and your family?
Well, I was brought up by an Italian mother and an Italian grandmother and an Italian mother. And well, it was manja and fun and laugh. And my mother played the piano and sang. So it was a real effervescent Italian home. You know, I was sick a lot when I was a kid. I had asthma, and I got involved in working out. And I knocked my system, the asthma out of my system by working out. And I get more involved in working out. Then I opened a health club, in the first health club in Massachusetts, in Quincy. And from there, I went and opened a second health club in Hyannis. And after I sold my second health club, I wrote for fitness magazines for 25 years, training and nutrition articles and all the other stuff you mentioned. And talking to my female friend here, and I was telling her all about when I lived in the North and the experiences, because it's so wild. It's hard to believe. So I'm telling her this story, then another day I say, oh, I got to tell you this story. She finally said, why don't you write a book? I said, why didn't I think of that? Because I was voted 3 times best writer of training and nutrition articles. I said, that's not a bad idea. So I wrote a book. I hibernated for 2.5 years, 6 to 8 hours a day without one day off, and wrote that book. It was actually finished. When I had 750 pages, and I edited it down to 535, and it's sounding like crazy. It's all my experiences. I moved. It's like 90% true, the book. I moved out in the suburbs of Boston. I moved right into Boston, North End, which you had to be a townie to live there then. They wouldn't let you move in. And I moved in, and little did I know, I moved in right in the middle of a mob war going on for control of the rackets. True story.
You were young.
Yeah, I was like...
You were young. Did you realize that this was a mob war going on?
Well, after I started reading the papers and seeing the cruises and the bodies, I said, this isn't Halloween. You know,
sure.
Yeah, I said, something's going on. So they... I moved in and got involved in boxing. Then in the meantime, and every weekend I'd go home to Framingham, which is a suburb of Boston, stay at my parents' place, which is just manja, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. Then bring home jars of meatballs and sauce every time I left.
And so in the beginning, though, when you were very sick as a kid and you had asthma, I know what asthma's like because my mother had it for many years when she outgrew it or something. I don't know what happened, but she doesn't have it any longer. But it's a horrible, horrible disease to have, and you can't breathe, and you're wheezing, and you can't go to school, and can't play sports. So what was the catalyst that drove you to get involved with bodybuilding or sports? Or I know your dad was involved in that situation. What was that?
Yeah. Well, my father had polio when I was a kid, and he beat that except for it all out of his system except for one calf. Still affected for the rest of his life. And but he used to take me and my brother to all of the sports playing, but I couldn't run, you know what I mean? I'd run up to first base and I'd be out of gas. And but eventually, I think with weight training, I think I blew it out of my system. So I took it to another level, you know. I just said, okay, if I can do that, you know, what else can I do? So I started really training monstrously. And the first year I gained, I think it was 55 pounds. I went from I was about 14. I weighed I weighed 85 pounds. And in a year, I weighed like 140, 50. You know, and what a difference. I can remember from the ballpark, that's the thing I remember, from playing baseball one summer to playing baseball the next summer. I was smacking balls, world record distance. They couldn't visit. All the guys at the baseball field, what happened to him? It's a true story. I remember this one kid who was a priest, Mike Johnson. He said, what happened to Preston? Holy mackerel. I was just smacking the ball. I was like 14 or 15. I was the strongest guy in the field, you know? So all the coaches I had said, don't lift weights. You're going to get muscle bound, hernias, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, right. Not quite.
So the reason I asked you that is because it just goes to show that a strong will to be healthy and then also to eat better foods and to exercise, and you did bodybuilding, actually can defeat a disease.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is.
It really is. And
I didn't know that. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and I also read that you were impressed with Liston and Cassius Clay as well.
Oh yeah.
Why were you drawn to them?
Well, they were supposed to have a boxing match in Boston, and one of them, Liston, trained in Plymouth, which. And Clay trained in, actually Ali trained in Boston. And that's, you know, driving distance from where I live. So I wanted to see, actually it was an article about Sonny Liston in the Globe, and it had his measurements. I said, holy mackerel, this guy is big. You know, he had like 18 and a half inch arms. I said, this and that. I said, oh, I got to go see this guy. And he was all that big, believe me. So I drove down to Plymouth to see him train. And for a day, the place was packed, and it was $3 to get in. And everybody was dressed well. Jack, sport jackets and the women and blah, blah, blah. And he was treated like royalty by his trainers. And mm-hmm. he had a sparring partner, Amos Big Train Lincoln, that was a moose. And man, they had a world war in the gym. And I saw it all. The next day, I wanted to see Cassius Clay train in Boston. And there was no charge to get in. There was like four people there. I said, what? He was a champion then, too. And I just couldn't believe it. I stood right up against the ring while he was sparring and shadow boxing, watched the whole thing. And he was pontificating about how wonderful he was and all that, which is pretty obnoxious. But he's just selling tickets, I guess. I don't know. And the press had printed all, you know, and heated it up. So they were getting over $1 million each for that one fight. And I said,
wow.
That doesn't seem too hard to take. And that was I was actually bigger than Liston at that point. And because I was like, I think 20. And I'm quite sure I was as strong as he was. But being able to box like him was another enchilada. I had to figure out how to learn. And that's what came and moving into the North End, because the only gym in the city was in Boston in the North End. So that's what I did. And bingo, mob war. Yeah.
And so when you saw Cassius Clay, were you equally impressed with him as well?
I was impressed with him. With his rope jumping was very impressive, but not mm-hmm. a great deal more than Liston. Mm-hmm. But he was fast on his feet. That was his escape route when he boxed. When people punched, he'd move on his feet. And he used his whole career, you know.
And so did you pursue boxing lessons?
Well, I went to the gym, and it was called the Friend Street Gym. and which was walking distance from my house in the North End. And you just go and you start working out, and there's trainers all over the place. They're looking for fighters, you know. So that's when I got involved with a guy and tried to set me up and knock out. I just figured out from block one, they tried to beat me. You know, it was unbelievable. Mm. The guy said,
so, oh, go ahead.
Well, the guy said, we got an exhibition out in the suburbs. It's out in Norwood, which is right sort of beside Framingham, in the woods, in an outdoor club. This was in the spring of whatever year. Might have been 64 or 5. And it's going to be covered by the Boston Globe and blah, 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 blah. So, okay. So I went out there, and it was a ton of people, but it was all to promote this guy that I was supposedly fighting an exhibition with. But the guy, I had like 3 fights, and this guy had like 5. And he came out of the corner like a hurricane, started throwing at me. Said, holy mackerel, this is supposed to be a boxing sparring match. You know, this guy's trying to take my head off. And true story. And the guy that brought me in there, talked me in, it was named Paul Stivaletta. And he was, I didn't know at the time, but he was mobbed up to death. And he threw me right to the wolves, but it didn't happen because I knocked the guy down in the first round. I had him on the ropes in the second. Then, it was supposed to be a 3-round fight. He dragged it out for 5 rounds, trying to drown me. I'd run out of gas and get beat up. It didn't work, though.
Mm-hmm.
And the referee was a guy named Paul Penda, who was a middleweight champion of the world. He beat Sugar Ray Robinson twice. After the fight, he said, whenever you turn pro, I want to handle you. So I said, I'll think about it. And I asked my father, who was here ringside, with my brother. And that's what happened. We left and discussed it and blah, 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 you know. And so then that's where the story starts, you know, with my boxing. And I got shifted to one guy to another guy. And then I met my main trainer, named Johnny Two-Heads, he was a Cree-Canadian Indian. And, man,
wow.
he owned Boston. He owned 6'3", about 215. He didn't have 3 ounces of fat on him. And he never lifted a weight.
Wow.
All, you know, a mesomorph. This guy was complete, full-blown mesomorph.
Wow.
And he had a left hook. He said it is harder than Japanese arithmetic.
So tell us, what's the names of are your main characters in your book and a little bit about your characters?
Well, my character, me, is Gianni mm-hmm. Valentino Romasco, which is my mother's
name. Like a romantic name.
Well, this is kind of funny in a way. Gianni is John in Italian.
Right.
You probably know that. And yeah. That's really my first name, but they never used it on me. That was always called Preston. And Valentino was my grandmother's. She was in love with him, like all the women in the world in the 20s was in love with him, you know. And she said she was a widow in the 1930s. And I said, why don't you ever get married? She said, if I ever wanted to get married, it would have been Rudolph Valentino. I thought, Jesus, believe me. So, anyway, it's Gianni Valentino, and Romasco was my mother's maiden name, which was my grandmother's last name. So, and that's why I chose that name. So, anyway, there's a lot of Italian people in the book, of course, and half of them are nice Italians, and the other half are mob people, you know? And they're really, they're all based on real people.
Well, the Italians are very animated. So what did your grandmother and your mother, what was their reaction? I can imagine it in my head, but what was the reaction when you told them that you were going to be a boxer?
Oh, this is a funny bit. I wrote what I write in the book as I come home to tell my mother. And this is exactly what happened, but I come home to tell my mother, and I started telling her, my grandmother ran out of the room and ran upstairs to her bedroom with her hands over her ears. I said to my mother, where's she going? She said she's going to her room to hang herself.
I knew it had to be quite dramatic.
Yeah.
Typical.
Oh, yeah.
So what, you had some best friends in your book, too. Tell us about
your best friend.
Yeah.
Oh, my best friend. I had a guy, well, a guy that I grew up with. He sparred with me, and he worked my corner for my very first fight, and he didn't know any more about working a corner than I did. We just went into Boston. It was an amateur fight in Boston in, in the early 60s. And I go in the ring, and he handed me a bottle to drink between rounds through the ropes. He didn't get in the ring even. He didn't know what to do. But his name was Billy Conicelli, but I call him Paul, I can't remember the last name, Paul Amante or something. I can't remember the name. But he's through the whole book, you know. And the other Italians, my relatives, crazy relatives. I mean crazy and funny.
Well, you also, were you involved in nutrition as well when you were, did you get involved in nutrition when you were boxing?
Well,
was that part of it?
I ate correctly because I wanted to keep my weight up. And there wasn't a lot of information about nutrition back in those days whatsoever. And
that's true.
The only nutrition information that was available through bodybuilders who ate correctly, you know. And I read a lot of bodybuilding magazines to get informed. And then you experiment and see what works with you. And I found out a lot of stuff. And I could vary my weight like 20, 30 pounds in 3 months by just changing my diet. You know, and
So during this time that you were young and you were involved in boxing, did you have any little story you could tell our audience about what, if you were ever approached by one of the mob guys?
Oh, yeah. They wanted me to, after I hooked up with this guy named Johnny Two-Heads, he had an 80-8 record, and he didn't get involved with the mob, so he didn't go anywhere. But it's the only way you get to the title is you had to go through them. You had to sign with them, and they'd get your title fight, and you'd get about 10% of what the newspapers would tell you you'd get. But that's if you signed with them. If you didn't sign with them, you got nothing. You got a bag of air. And that's how controlled
it was. So you only got 10%?
Oh, yeah, nothing.
So you're taking all the punches.
Oh, yeah, you're taking the beating.
You get 10%.
As they say, you're taking a lump.
Okay.
But you never made any money. And that's changed now a little bit, but it's still a very crooked game. And they wanted me to sign with them and leave my manager, Johnny Two-Heads, and I wouldn't do it. So in the book, this is where I stretch it a little bit. They try to murder him, and There was a lot of murders going on in Boston. And, you know, you'd see a guy training in a gym, and if he really was one, like there's a guy right now. There's a guy from Russia who came over from Russia, and he stayed over in a part of New York. It's called Little Moscow, and Russian mob is, you know, they're involved in boxing too. So this guy was a heavyweight. This is about 5 years ago. He was a heavyweight, and he was going up the ranks, and this and that, and all of a sudden he just disappeared, never to be heard from again.
Well, sounds like the whistleblowers.
Something happened, you know. But that happened a lot when I was there. It was a trainer, and I can't remember the guy's name. This was in the 60s. And he just disappeared. You know?
And in your book, your character talks about, that these guys can actually ruin your career, like make you disappear, I guess, and get a major beating.
I knew one guy named Irish Al Kevlin. He was a middleweight, he was a pretty good fighter. And the promoter in Boston was a guy named Sam Silverman. Slippery Sam Silverman. They tried to kill him twice. They blew up his Cadillac once he started and blew up. They didn't get him, though. They tried to shoot him through his picture window of a kitchen, and they didn't do that. When he finally died, his name was Sam Silverman. When he finally died, every fighter in New England went to his funeral. And I said to my trainer, I said, geez, you told me everybody hated this guy. I didn't know him like Johnny did. And I said, every guy in the funeral in New England went to his funeral. How could they hate him? Johnny said, they all want to make sure he was dead.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. He was.
Oh, my God.
He ripped so many people off. He promised you this money. One guy I know, he fought Worcester, which is outside of Boston. He fought a 10-round main event, and he got zero money. And he got 6 stitches over each eye. And he said, Sam Silverman told me he had a bad gait. He couldn't pay him. Place was packed. I was at the fight, I know.
Wow. So how did, I know that you in your life, in your real life, what made you decide to open up a health spa?
Well,
did you just want
to
help people, or were you interested
in there weren't any health clubs.
Business?
There weren't any health clubs in Massachusetts. And they were all over the West Coast. I said, it's got to come here sooner or later. So I opened the health club in Quincy after I found a location. And the first day we opened, it exploded. And I remember I went to town hall to get a, this is a good story, I went to town hall to get a permit to open a health club. And I'm standing there, I remember this like it happened yesterday. Standing at the counter, I need a permit to open a health club. She says, what's a health club? I said, well, I'm going to put equipment in it. I'm going to rent a building, fill it full of equipment. We're going to put saunas, showers, et cetera, lounge. And sell memberships. People are going to come in and work out on a weekly basis, daily basis. And they're going to be trained by me or someone else that knows what they're doing. She said, people are going to pay you for that. I said, yeah. She said, Mary or whatever the girl was, sitting 20 feet away. She said, Mary, come over here. She said, tell Mary this story. So I told Mary the story, and they both laughed. They said, people are going to pay you money. She said, here's your permit. True story. And
wow.
I opened the place. Well, that's true story. No, I'm kidding. And now in Massachusetts, there's thousands of health clubs. Thousands. I was the only one. There was a YMCA in Boston. It had a room that was 10 by 10 cinder blocks, no windows, and those old circular dumbbells, those old timers strewn all over the place. Place was filthy, and that was the only place to work out in Boston, or Massachusetts, as far as I know. And so I said there'll be another, as soon as I find a location, there'll be another one. So it really worked out well. I went inside a bowling alley. They had a big monstrous lounge that just folded. They couldn't make it. I don't know why, but and I rented the lounge and renovated the whole thing and put in equipment and mirrors and wall-to-wall rugs. And I'll tell you how long ago this was. I put in a color TV in the lounge, and we advertised it, color TV. And when Batman came on, I think it was 8 o'clock on Monday nights, the health club would empty and go into the lounge to watch Batman. That's how long ago that was. You know, the one with Adam West?
Story.
True story.
That's Adam a funny West, story, too.
Place would empty out right into the lounge.
And bowling back then was super popular, too.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I think it's making a comeback today because I talk to a lot of people and they say they're going bowling. So I think it's making a comeback, but it died out after a while. But back then it was super popular, probably up through the 80s and kind of died out.
They had leagues and all that stuff, you know, tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad and my mom were on the league. And go to
my mother was a big bowler.
Yeah, my parents too. They like bowling. And so you also, because you're into health care and taking care of yourself, and you overcame your asthma and being a sickly young boy, to your parents' surprise and everyone else's, and you became a second winner of Mr. Universe, and then you also became first winner of Mr. USA, which was all natural. So you are a strong advocate for steroid-free sports, and so many athletes have gotten kicked out, like in football or whatever, because they were found to be on steroids. What do you think about people who use steroids?
Well, cheating.
And get caught up in that. It's just cheating, right?
Yeah, 70% of the athletes don't use them, and 30% do. You get guys like Barry Bonds and the other guy, and it's from Oakland. I can't remember his name. Mike McGuire. He had like 70 home runs and beat Babe Ruth's record. I said, no, he didn't, because he was on steroids. And he played like 20 more games in a season than Babe Ruth. But anyway, all those guys were just steroids. And I'll tell you right now, Barry Bonds, they didn't say it, but I guarantee he was on growth hormones. You see the size of his head? Yeah, he's a monstrous skull. That's not normal.
It's not normal. It's really sad, actually.
Yeah, you can see a picture of him. You see this huge skull, and that's from growth hormone.
Oh, that's really sad.
If this take a close look at his skull, it's just enormous. And, well, all the bodybuilders now, there's two types of bodybuilders. There's the natural bodybuilders, and then you get the steroid bodybuilders. The guys that take steroid bodybuilding, now that's the league or whatever that Arnold was in. He and everybody else was taking, but it was legal then to take steroids, you know. But the guys, Arnold was, he's about 5'10", I know, because I met him. He's not 6'2". And he's about 5'10", 210. You say, well, that's pretty big, you know. The guy's now 5'9", 300 pounds on the stage. Can you imagine?
The guy that
won the Mr. Olympia this year is the biggest person I've ever seen in my life.
Really?
He's so big. In fact, his middle name is huge or something like that. I can't remember his name. I don't follow it anymore because it's so drug-ridden. And it's chemical warfare. It's nothing to do with
chemical
bodybuilding, eating, and it's chemical warfare. It's how much drugs you put in there. Yeah.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. It is chemical warfare. And I didn't think about it that way, but that's a true statement. And I'm just glad that you are advocating for steroid-free sports, because I think that's really important. We have way too many chemicals being injected into people and animals today. It's insane in food. Yeah.
And the government's not helping it either. government's telling you have to get injected. Yeah, right. According to who?
Because they're invested in Wall Street.
Yeah. It's insane.
So, and then in your book, Room Full of Killers, which I'm hoping to see it on the big screen one day, because it'd make a great movie. Tell us about any romances that Johnny came across during his success.
Oh, well, the hottest pizza place, I think, in Boston is in the North End. It's called La Regina. And it was about a block from where I lived. And I used to, the food and the pizza was unbelievable. I used to eat in there like 4 or 5 nights a week. So I met somebody there, and it blossomed into a thing, and, you know, and that's about it. I brought her home to Framingham and meet my mother and grandmother, and they loved her because she's Italian, and you're not gonna meet a very rare thing to find an Irish girl in Regina's. It's 100% Italian, the joint, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're in there, but I used to have to. Believe me, when I moved into the North End, you had to be Italian, and they wouldn't let you move in there. It's a true story.
That was a lot of neighborhoods back then, you know. My grandparents lived in an Italian neighborhood near the Pasadena area, and. And it was all Italians, and the women would, my grandmother would be sitting out in a rocking chair on the front porch crocheting, and I'd be brushing her hair because that's how she relaxed. And I still have some of her crochet pieces, which is was very popular in Italy. And it was becoming a lost art. And I hear that it's coming back. I don't know, but that's what I hear. But I have some of her beautiful pieces that she crocheted. And, those are great memories. I mean, you just can't. I mean, I'm glad you put yours down in a book.
Yeah, my grandmother crocheted so much and so often and so many years that her index finger on her left hand was bent, permanently bent. You know, they push against that finger.
Oh, I can believe that.
If that finger was, I got a picture of her, and sitting with her sister, and of course they're both dressed in black, because her husband died 40 years ago. You can see my grandmother's finger.
Yeah,
I
believe
that. Show people a picture, and I said, look at this finger, that's crocheting for 50 years.
Yeah, she crocheted bedspread, she crocheted towels, and crocheted the ends of the sheets and the pillowcases, you name it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And so I'm thinking about actually donating this huge doily she made to the museum because it's such a rare art now. So I was thinking about doing that, but you know how you hate to let go of your grandmother's stuff.
Oh, yeah. I had a thing my grandmother crocheted from my mother's piano. I don't know where it went, but it was the thing she put across. This is an upright piano. And you put it all across the top of the upright, and it was like 5,000 roses with a green.
Oh, well.
Red roses with a green leaves and things. It was unbelievable. I don't know where it went. I have an idea.
Oh, that's the same.
But it was unbelievable. People would come and see it on the piano and go, wow, who made that? That's my grandmother.
Yeah. I mean, it's wonderful what they crocheted, and I still have the towels my grandmother made, and she crocheted baskets, and then they had the roses coming out of the basket, and so I kind of cherish those, you know, and keep them in a safe place, but it's something you can't get back, you know what I mean? It's something you can't get back.
I got a pair of socks my grandmother knitted for me, and she must have knitted these at least 50 years ago, and I didn't wear them at all because I don't want to wear them out.
Yeah, that's just it. You know, it means something special. And so in your book, Room Full of Killers, what would you say to our audience who like thrillers and like sports and boxing and steamy romances? You played that down a little bit, but it was a steamy romance going on
in the
book.
In the book, it was very steamy.
So,
one of my critics said,
Go ahead.
One of my critics said, smoke comes off the pages in the love scenes and the boxing scenes.
Right. And
it's a good line.
It is, and but it's a true line too, and so you kind of played that down. But it is. I just want the audience to know it is steamy, and it's a page turner. So, what would you say was the most enjoyable part of your book that you really really felt passionate about writing about? Was it about the family? Was it about your health? Was it about the boxing?
Reminiscing about the boxing scenes was certainly amazing. And the scenes that I recall from my family, the actually, you know, the dialogue and stuff, it's just, I have like 110% recall. You know, I can sit down at a dinner table and almost remember everybody's conversation, you know. And because my mother was very, very, very funny. And that is in the book, too, all of every line I could come up with. And I rehashed all those things. Instance,
yeah, I think that's important because it makes for the imagination to feel the warmth of that era and the family and the difference in yesterday and today and how things were back then and how they are today. And family is so important. And that's another reason I think people will love the book, Room Full of Killers, because family was important back then and what our parents and our grandparents thought about our ideas and what we wanted to do and what we wanted to be, who we wanted to marry and so forth. I think that's traditions that are missing today in a lot of our family units because everybody's out working just to make a living, not judging anybody. It's just the way it is. And so the interaction, I think, is important.
Yeah.
To the story. I think it's very important.
It's
and so what are you planning on writing another book?
I am planning on it because I get every time I get an idea, I'll write it down. I write it out a little bit, then put it over on a pile. And I got a pile of stuff. I know I can put it together and write book two.
I'm just laughing because I do too. I have several books that I have, parts of them put aside, and because like you said, the idea comes to you, and so you don't want to lose it. And I agree. It's like life's experiences are so exciting when you really stop and think about some of the things that happened in your life and the people that you met along the way and experienced certain things with, and they're a human interest. I believe that. See, I like your book because it's human interest, and I think that more people should write about human interest because it makes people feel like they're not alone, or they're not, they're not crazy, or they experience that too. And it's almost like a friend, when you have a book that has real life in it, real life experiences. And that's what your book does. It has real life experiences. And I really truly cherish that.
I went to a health seminar in right outside of Boston about 6 or 8 months ago. Maybe a year, I can't remember. And I was sitting in the front row, and the lecturer introduced me, which embarrassed the hell out of me, because he said, this is Preston Rendell. He just wrote this book called blah blah blah, Room Full of Killers, and he's joining us today. And the guy beside me says, you're Preston Rendell? I said, yeah. Why? He said, I just finished your book. And this guy he's Italian. He said, that's the best Italian story I've ever read. He said, it's better than Raging Bull. It's better than Rocky. It's unbelievable. And he went on for a half an hour. He didn't stop. He said, I'll drive you back to Cape Cod. I want to take you out to dinner tonight and talk to you. I couldn't believe this.
it's got real human interest in it. And it keeps you wanting to know more, and it is a page turner, and it's a beautiful book. And so I hope everyone will get a copy of Room Full of Killers. And now, Preston, unfortunately, our time always flies. I don't know why, but it flies by. But now's your time to shine, and you have a minute to tell our audience anything you want about your book, yourself, your contact, and how they can purchase your book, of course.
Okay, Room Full of Killers is available on Amazon. And if you go on there, read the reviews. The reviews are unbelievable. And that's about all I can say. There's a little bit of the story on Amazon. You can get some of that. I think there's like 20 or 30 pages. And you'll get an idea of the writing, and it starts out in Framingham with a lot of my grandmother and mother talking, which was you'd pay to see that. So funny. And they had a vaudeville act, Jesus. But anyway, it's available there, and you can contact me at I think my website's on there if you want to contact me. But the book, that's what's available.
Yeah, PrestonHealthSpa.net.
Com.
Right?
I changed it. I just changed it to com.
Oh. Okay, so we have Preston's, that's with an S, PrestonsHealthSpa.com.
Correct.
And fantastic. So they know where to find you, and they know how to get your book. And I just want to thank you so much for being our very special dynamic author with your novel, Room Full of Killers, and much more success. And let me know what your next novel is going to be about. I'll be curious.
Well, it's going to take place right where this last one ended. Exactly.
Oh, cool. That's cool. Okay, then we'll look forward to it.
I got it all figured out.
All righty. And so we'll talk again, and you have a blessed day, Preston Rendell, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks
bye-bye.
For having me on. I enjoyed myself. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you. Bye. And Preston Rendell has left the building, and Rose Colombo must leave the building too. Two Italians are leaving the building. And let me tell you, I can relate to those funny stories because my family was pretty funny too. And even makes me laugh when I think about some of the things that were going on. And so now we have to say, we'll talk again next Wednesday from 12 to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We'll have another very special guest, and she'll be talking to you about her wonderful book and her her wonderful gift of wanting to give to others. And so I think that's going to be very encouraging for our, and maybe we can start getting our country back on track as well. So God bless you. God bless America. God bless the entire world. And may God bring peace and intervene in this crazy world and twilight zone we're living in. It doesn't feel like reality anymore, and it definitely doesn't feel like America. So let's get back on track. Let's get back to normal. Let's fight back to be normal again. Let's just enjoy humanity while we're here. It's a very short journey. You do not want to distance from your family, from your loved ones, from your best friends, from the world, that people you've never met yet and are waiting to meet you. So let's all just pray that God intervenes, places his hand on America, so we can be examples that you can go back to normal. You can live with a flu, a virus. There are cures that doctors have that are being silenced, but there are cures if you catch it in the very beginning, and they will help you. And so Google and find out who some of these doctors are, because there are some wonderful doctors who are ethical who have been silenced. So also check out Dr. Mercola's site too. That's Mercola. He always gives wonderful information and suggestions and what is happening in the medical field. So I've been following him since 2009, and I still follow him. So on that note, I'm going to say have a blessed day, and may God place his hand on you and your family as well.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.